The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Katie Neuhauser for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religious News Service. Our first article is entitled, Netflix's Jewish Matchmakers Hot Takes on Faith-Focused Dating. As Valentine's Day approaches, conversations around love and dating tend to revolve around chemistry, romance, and physical attraction. But Aliza Ben Shalom, a Jewish matchmaker and relationship coach who has facilitated the marriages of more than 200 couples, argues that daters need to focus less on lust and more on shared values and goals and the kind of life they want to build together. While Ben Shalom, the author of three books about finding Europe a shirt or soulmate, and the star of the 2023 Netflix reality series Jewish Matchmaking, shares this message with all of her clients. It takes on extra meaning when prospective partners describe themselves as religiously observant or spiritually inclined. For these daters, Ben Shalom told Religious News Service that the way they practice their religion and express spirituality plays a central role in determining who may be a good match. I start with faith-based issues, and then within that, find someone who is an appropriate fit, and then find the personality, the looks, and everything else that's in alignment with who you are, said Ben Shalom, whose clients have ranged from secular to very, very religious. If the faith-based part doesn't match, the personality doesn't matter, the looks don't matter, and everything else doesn't matter. For example, instead of asking someone who is Jewish and whether they are secular or Orthodox, she'll have them consider their observance practices. That's because a dater who has no interest in keeping kosher or strictly observing the Sabbath would have a hard time creating a happy life with someone who does. The same would be true of less observant Hindus, Christians, or Muslims dating a person whose life revolves around their temple, church, or mosque, and who wants to give their children a rigorous religious education. Even before the first date, single folks should think seriously about their priorities, she said, where they want to live, the kind of community they want to belong to, and how they plan to raise their family are massive decisions when somebody lives a faith-based life. And unless the partners share similar lifestyles, goals, and dreams, love isn't enough to sustain a relationship in the long term, the matchmaker said. It comes down to, even though I love you, I'm not going to be able to live with you. Ben Shalom, who now lives in Israel, was raised in Pennsylvania and became religious when she was 24 years old. She recalled that when she first became religious, she contacted a Jewish man who also identified as spiritual on a dating site. However, she soon discovered that he was not religiously observant and had no interest in becoming observant. "This means we are totally incompatible," he replied to her, she remembered. She appreciated his candor and began to look for a partner who more closely matched how she observes Judaism. 8 months later, she was married. And while no two daters live the same exact lifestyle or have identical goals, Ben Shalom said shared values gives them a trajectory. "It's like synchronized swimming," she said. "Chemistry is a moment. Synchronized living is chemistry for a lifetime." From her years of matchmaking and reflecting on her own happy marriage, Ben Shalom said the couples who succeed tend to be kind, not rigid, and put effort into verbally communicating with their partner. "Kindness is the glue in a relationship that holds it together while we're figuring everything else out, even during the rough patches," she said. "Flexibility means I know who I am, but I have the ability to be who I am and shift to what's going on in my relationship." For example, when Ben Shalom's matchmaking business unexpectedly turned into an international phenomenon, it was flexibility that enabled her and her husband to navigate the new reality. Our agreement has always been that one parent would be home to raise the children, and we always thought that it would be me, she said. When all this happened, my husband said, I can be a stay-at-home parent. Ben Shalom said verbal communication is what couples need to struggle with the most. To communicate to your partner in a loving, sensitive, give you the benefit of a doubt kind of way is very hard, especially when you're feeling really heated about something, she said. Fortunately, people can improve their communication skills, she said, likening it to learning another language. And while many religious or spiritually inclined single people worry that prioritizing faith or values is old-fashioned and will limit their chances of finding love, Ben Shalom disagrees. It limits your options, and that's a good thing, she said. I want 90% of your dating pool to be filtered out. I really only want you to deal with the top 10% of people that are relevant. It's a lot like finding the right employee for a job. Does an HR person want to choose from 1,000 applicants? No. And if she could redefine Valentine's Day, Ben Shalom said, she would shift the focus away from red roses and candlelit dinners toward doing something good for someone else, regardless of whether one is single or part of a couple. Go volunteer. Go to a soup kitchen. Go walk dogs in a shelter, she said. Go do something. Love is an action. Love is a verb. Our next article is entitled, Why Fewer Latin Americans Claim Religion But Still Pray and Believe. The number of Latin Americans who say they are not affiliated with a religion has long been steadily increasing. And over the past decade, according to a 2024 Pew Research Center survey, the percentage of those known as nones roughly doubled in Argentina to 24% in 2024, Brazil 15%, and Chile 33%. It tripled in Mexico to 20%, and Peru 12%, and almost quadrupled in Colombia, 23%. But for many, that label doesn't mean a rejection of faith. Across Brazil, Colombia, and beyond, people continue to pray, meditate, and participate in rituals drawing from Christian, indigenous, African, and Eastern traditions in deeply personal ways, so-called nones told Religious News Service. Their beliefs and practices may reveal a blind spot of such surveys in how they rely on Christian and Western frameworks to define what counts as religion. For Camille Quintino, a 28-year-old dietitian who lives near Rio de Janeiro, a typical week involves attending a Sunday service at a Baptist church, taking part in ritual baths and cowrie shell divination with an Umbanda priestess, and going to Diksha meditation gatherings. She recites Hail Mary and Our Father Catholic prayers and uses Jampamala prayer beads. She keeps incense and crystals in her home to attempt to cleanse negative energy. However, she identifies as religiously unaffiliated. I believe in the Bible, in Christianity, she said, but today I also believe in spiritualism and Umbanda. I've been studying these traditions a lot. Coutinho grew up in a typical Catholic Latin American religious environment. Her parents were Catholic, though not very practicing, she said. And when she fell ill, her mother would often take her to see a traditional folk healer who prayed over people, known in Brazil as a rezadiara. In her teenage years, Coutinho converted to evangelical Christianity, and her family followed. In more recent years, however, she began to distance herself from her church as political polarization intensified in the country. The church's support for right-wing politics, especially its alignment with former President Jair Bolsonaro, along with witnessing increasing homophobic discourse there, pushed her away, even as her parents chose to stay, she said. Quintino fits into a category of nuns that encompasses far more than only atheists or agnostics, and which is especially prevalent in Latin America. Her experiences also echo a broader pattern in many traditional cultures, including Latin American indigenous ones, where spiritual beliefs are inseparable from everyday life, social organization, and community practices, says Gustavo Morello, a sociologist of religion at Boston College in Massachusetts. After Catholicism was introduced to Latin America by European colonizers, many religions did not have enough priests to sustain it on an institutional level. While colonial-era cities such as Rio de Janeiro, Mexico City, and Lima had a regular clerical presence, vast rural areas did not, and religious life was maintained by the communities, Morello said. This opened space for practices that diverged from official Catholic orthodoxy and incorporated Afro-descendant and indigenous spiritualities. As a result, many people came to describe their faith in personal terms, often combining multiple spiritual traditions while still identifying as Catholic. For the last 100 years, 9 in 10 Latin Americans believe in something, Morello said. The idea that you are only one religion is very North Atlantic. In surveys, this complexity is rarely visible. And until well into the 20th century, Morello said, one was typically either Catholic or outside the cultural mainstream altogether. In Brazil and Colombia, more religiously unaffiliated people said they believe in God, pray daily, and considered religion very important in their lives than do those who identify as Christians in European countries such as Spain, the United Kingdom, and France, according to Pew. Europe represents a practice grounded in doctrine, in belief and form of religious practice, whereas here in Latin America, we have an effervescence of religious experiences that goes far beyond a purely rational adherence to religious content, said Flavio Senra, a religious studies professor at Pontifical Catholic University of Minas Gerais in Brazil. That could be because the region's culture emphasizes believing in something beyond the material word, Morello said. People in Latin America do believe in this enchanted reality, that there is a dimension in life that we cannot explain with what we see only, he said. Both scholars said that rather than thinking of the trend toward religious disaffiliation as secularization, in which religious beliefs diminish within the culture, the shift is better viewed as a change in how people approach their belief. The idea of enchanted modernity explains better why we see Latin America. I'm sorry, what we see in Latin America, Morello said, because we are looking at a vibrant spiritual and religious society that does things to engage with this other world. At the same time, the number of atheists and agnostics is not growing in the region and remains a small percentage of the population, both scholars said. That also suggests the growth of the nuns category instead reflects weaker ties to religious institutions and greater freedom today to shop across the religious market. A context of greater religious, political, and cultural pluralities creates an environment of greater freedom for people to express their beliefs without being judged as harshly as they were in the past, Senra said. Juan Guevara, a 35-year-old school philosophy teacher from Bogota, was raised in an observant Catholic household. However, as a teenager, he began encountering other belief systems, particularly Buddhism, and started questioning his family religion, he told RNS. The discovery planted a lasting doubt. If there were many ways of understanding the world, why should we claim one exclusive truth? Class differences and injustice also weighed on his decision. It started to bother me a great deal to see that people who were particularly devout, those who professed their beliefs with special fervor, did not strike me as good people, he said. Guevara's academic training in philosophy pushed him toward broader intellectual and spiritual exploration, but Buddhism remained a recurring reference point. He participated in Soto Zen and Vipassana meditation retreats and was drawn in by what he described as their internal coherence and lack of institutional demands. There was a lot of consistency there, he said. No one was asking me for a sacrament or a promise that I would stay forever. He also took part in ceremonies involving Ayahuasca, often organized by or in dialogue with indigenous groups in Colombia. These experiences carried religious elements and were also deeply ethical, cultural, and communal, he said. But the freedom to engage without lifelong commitment was, for him, essential. Cotino's experience is similar in that way. She consults with a Mayo de Santo priestess in the Umbanda tradition and attends rituals, but deliberately avoids formal initiation. I don't want to go through the initiation process, she said. I know that being part of Umbanda, for example, demands a much greater devotion than I'm willing to give. Even so, I feel close to the practices. But she described moments of confusion, too. Sometimes I get confused trying to understand where the stories fit, she said. Where is Jesus in the stories of the Orixas, which is divine spirits? Still, she continues to engage with various traditions. I find a lot of beauty and strength in these stories, so I keep believing and studying. In experiencing different faith practices, this growing group of believers often gathers traces and memories, taking what they believe is good from each faith and leaving aside what does not resonate. The religion may not be the religiosity that Catholic leaders expect, nor the one Pentecostal pastors want, Morello said, but it is what the people do. It's mixed. It's not pure. It's imperfect. It's not orthodox, but it is what the people are practicing. The next article is entitled, In New Letter, Orthodox Rabbis Say Jewish Law Forbids Conversion Therapy. A group of Orthodox rabbis from the U.S. and Israel issued a strongly worded letter condemning discredited practices that try to convert LGBTQ plus people to heterosexuality, a rarity for an establishment that still largely sees queer people as sinful. The letter, which was drafted years ago but released earlier in January in Israel, includes the signatures of prominent modern Orthodox rabbis, including Yitz Greenberg, Shmuley Yanklovitz, and Daniel Sperber, as well as a number of female rabbis. It does not include Haredi rabbis, the most strictly observant of the Orthodox strain of Jewish life. When the letter was first published online, 75 rabbis listed their names, but that has since grown to 100 rabbis. We, the undersigned, it begins, believe that it is forbidden, according to halakhic principle and ethos, for anyone, including a rabbi, rabbinate, educator, or therapist, to recommend to any person to undergo treatment for the purpose of changing a person's sexual orientation, commonly known as conversion therapy. This is because conversion therapy is harmful, it does not work, and because same-sex attraction is not a mental health problem. More liberal streams of U.S. Jewish life, such as reform and conservative movements, have extended full equality to LGBTQ plus Jews, allowing them to be married and ordained. However, Orthodox Jewish denominations have only made limited strides toward reinterpreting texts that condemn gay love as a transgression, with most of that shift seen in modern Orthodox circles. What they are really trying to do is press the rest of the Orthodox community to recognize what is obvious, that gay people are not sick, nor are they suffering a character flaw, said Rabbi Steve Greenberg, one of the signers and a gay married man who co-founded Eshel, a New York-based nonprofit whose mission is to build LGBTQ plus inclusive Orthodox Jewish communities. They are just built differently by their creator. More than 20 U.S. states and the District of Columbia fully ban conversion therapy, and other states partially ban it. But in October, the Supreme Court heard a case challenging the constitutionality of Colorado's statewide restrictions on the practice for minors based on free speech claims. A majority of the court's justices seemed skeptical of the ban, which is expected to be ruled upon this June and could have implications for more than 20 other states with similar laws. Israel bans conversion therapy by medical professionals, including psychologists and social workers, but religious counselors may engage in it. To my deep embarrassment, conversion therapy is still awash, certainly in Israel, in the religious sector, and it was impossible just to stand by, said Rabbi Yitzhak Ajnar, an Israeli rabbi who began drafting the statement years ago. It's impossible just to stand idly by watching our friends and loved ones go through such torture. They're so traumatized. In many cases, their entire lives are ruined. In 2012, the Rabbinical Council of America, the body that represents modern Orthodox rabbis in the U.S., withdrew support of the Jewish conversion therapy organization, Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing, better known by its acronym, JONAH. But organizers of the letter said their statement makes clear they believe the practice is outright forbidden by halacha, or Jewish law. Orthodox institutions in the U.S. have made very halting steps toward LGBTQ plus equality. Last year, the Yeshiva University in New York said it would recognize an LGBTQ plus student club on campus, but then reversed course and banned the organization 50 days later, saying the club was antithetical to the Torah values of our yeshiva. Yankelevitz of Scottsdale, Arizona, published the letter on the website of Torat Chayim, a rabbinical association of progressive Orthodox rabbis that he founded. He said many Orthodox rabbis are privately opposed to conversion practices, but are afraid to publicly say so because they believe it will damage their reputation and careers. I regularly get blowback for supporting things like this, but the risk to this population is so high that it felt imperative to me to sign on, given this is often a saving life issue for people who are humiliated and really deeply hurt and damaged by attempts to engage in conversion therapy, he said. Our next article is entitled Willie Drake, Pastor Who Championed 1990s SBC Disney Boycott, Has Died. SBC is Southern Baptist Convention. Willie Drake, a California pastor who rallied Southern Baptists to boycott Disney in the 1990s, has died. Drake, 82, died on January 27th. The Southern Baptist Convention announced his death on Tuesday, February 10th. A longtime pastor of First Southern Baptist Church in Buena Park, California, not far from Disneyland, was a self-styled champion of the little guy, known for his outspoken opinions at the Southern Baptist Convention's annual meetings. His enthusiasm for speaking at meetings as a church delegate, known as a messenger, and for having his say about the direction of the nation's largest Protestant denomination was an example of what made the convention work, said former SBC President Bart Barber. Willie Drake rightly believed that any simple, faithful messenger could go to the microphone at the Southern Baptist Convention and do something that made an eternal difference, Barber, a Texas pastor, told RNS. In a non-hierarchical family of churches like the Southern Baptist Convention, that confidence, exemplified by Willie Drake, makes everything run. Born November 23, 1943, in Magnolia, Arkansas, Drake dropped out of high school to follow the rodeo and then served in the Navy, where he met his wife Barbara while stationed in Hawaii. He eventually graduated from Biola University and Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and worked in marketing and as a machinist before serving churches in Texas, Arkansas, and California. In the 1970s, he struggled with alcoholism and was fired from a job. In marketing before getting sober. A big part of 3 or 4 years, I honestly have very little knowledge of what happened, he told RNS in 1997. No stranger to controversy, Drake waged a legal battle with the city of Buena Park for years. His church ran a homeless shelter and feeding program, and city officials wanted to shut it down. Drake told the New York Times that he started the shelter after kicking a drunken man off church property. I never thought a preacher would treat me this way, he recalled the man saying, according to the Times. Drake told the Times that he'd rather follow the Bible than city officials. God didn't suggest, he commanded us to care for the poor. We have a mandate that goes all the way back to the Old Testament, Drake said in 1997. The shelter was condemned and shut down in 2017. Along with preaching and ministry to the homeless, Drake was outspoken about politics and social issues and tried to get the SBC to censure then President Bill Clinton for his sexual misconduct in office. I believe we need to hold him personally accountable, Drake said during the discussion about a 1998 resolution on ethical standards for political leaders, RNS reported at the time. Drake was perhaps best known for authoring a resolution for Southern Baptists to boycott Disney because the company's amusement parks hosted gay-friendly events. He first raised the idea of a boycott in 1996, but the SBC decided to hold off. But Southern Baptists determined a year later that a threat was not enough. They had once considered the company family-friendly, but grew increasingly frustrated with it due to its airing of programs and adoption of policies they believed favored gay rights. In 1997, SBC messengers voted overwhelmingly at the annual meeting to boycott the Walt Disney Company, including its theme parks, Disney stores, and the ABC television network, which is owned by Disney. The boycott was lifted in 2005. Disney offered special discounts to Southern Baptists during the denomination's 2010 annual meeting in Orlando, Florida, and later in 2022 when the denomination met in Anaheim, California. Disney theme parks are near both of those cities. The Gadfly pastor would later make headlines for praying for President Obama's death. He also embraced the birther conspiracy, popularized by Donald Trump, and sued to have the 2008 presidential election overturned, claiming Obama was not born in the United States. Drake also clashed with the SBC's executive committee for touting a denominational role during a failed run for public office. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Katie Neuhauser, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.